Thank you.
Can I just ask you first up, is there a definitive test that you can carry out on a sports person to decide whether or not they have concussion or not?
No, and it's probably the easy short answer. There are a whole lot of things that basically infer people do have a concussion. So, for example, if someone has a loss of consciousness or you see them stand up and walk unsteadily and they have some obvious neurological impairment, then by definition they have had a concussion. So some of the sideline testing protocols that you'll read about or see about, if you tick one of those boxes, so the patient's been knocked out, then they definitely had a concussion. The problem is more the sort of someone that stands up, they've been stunned, and then by the time you go and see them, they sort of appear normal. It's a much more difficult situation.
Is it fair to say then that best practice in a game of rugby, rugby league, if you see a player who loses their cognitive function or has taken a decent knock, just to keep them off the field for the rest of the game?
Yep, absolutely. So all the guidelines talk about recognise and remove, or if in doubt, sit them out. So at pretty much any level of rugby, if you think someone has been concussed and there's no medical kind of cover or no one to say to do a good assessment, then yep, you should definitely take them off the field.
So at Super Rugby level, and also what we see in the NRL when they leave the sideline, these cognitive tests, are they basically just there for show? Are they a waste of time?
No, they're very useful. You can't. The problem with them is you can't be completely definitive. So when you see someone come back on the field, the thinking that the doctor there has gone through is that this person hasn't had a concussion. So the patient comes, or the player goes back in the field, by definition, the doctor that's seen them has decided that they haven't been concussed. And I guess one of the tricky things is they don't always get it right, but it does give you some time away from the crowd, away from the media spotlight, to make a more informed decision. So it's absolutely a useful initiative. It's just that even with that initiative, it's hard to make the right decision every time.
How much pressure, though, is there realistically on doctors? I mean, are they completely neutral here? Can you definitively tell me that they're not under pressure, that there's not a level of influence here from coaches from a performance point of view?
Well, look, obviously, I mean, there clearly is a degree of influence from many stakeholders. But I guess the first tenet of being a doctor is to do no harm. And so I like to think in my own practice that I can make an independent decision that's in the patient's best interests. I don't always get it right. I can remember an incident when I was looking after an A-League team, a team that I hadn't looked after the player before, and I decided to put the guy back on and then had a very uncomfortable 20 or 30 minutes waiting until half time so I could reassess the guy again. And when I saw him at half time, it became clear that, yeah, he had been concussed and we took him off. So we are human, you know, we don't always get it right, but I think most doctors are trying to do the best for their patient, for the player that's injured.
Do we truly have an understanding of the potential long-term damage that is done later in life off the back of footballers or sports people or people in everyday life that have picked up multiple concussions at a young age?
No. So that is one of the problems. So the data that we're starting to see, and so this data come recently out of the NFL, that is obviously concerning, but it's not the full story. So the people that have donated their brains for those research projects are often people that have had symptoms of dementia and mental illness later on in life. So they're a sort of self-selecting sample. So these sorts of studies definitely raise a level of concern, but it's not the definitive word. And one of the problems for us is that we're not really going to be sure about that association for another 10 or 20 years when we've had sort of more long-term, high-quality studies. So I think there's definitely enough out there for us to be cautious. But there's not, to my mind, you know, playing sport has overwhelmingly positive associations, and we shouldn't be living in fear of concussion. So I have three little boys. I will let them play whatever sport they want to do, whether it's rugby, rugby league, NFL or soccer. But if they started to have concussions and they had one or two concussions over a period of time, then I'd start to be revisiting those decisions and saying, well, look, maybe we need to look at other sports.
I want to ask you then, as a father, because we've just seen Billy Slater KO'd, knocked out badly for the Melbourne Storm, to the point where he apparently couldn't remember the third and final State of Origin game. Now, he's putting his hand up and saying, hey, I want to play next week. And knowing the coaching staff, and certainly my perception is he will more than likely only miss one game and he'll be out playing in 2 weeks' time. We've seen a similar thing with Piers Francis for the Blues, knocked out in South Africa, cleared by the doctors, but a week later playing. Would you put your kids back out on the field a week later or 2 weeks later?
Potentially. So it's difficult to comment on individual cases. So we focus a lot with concussion around what we don't know, and certainly that is a concern, but there is a lot that we do know. And there are some really good documents around the management of concussion. And essentially what they say is if you rest until you're asymptomatic and then gradually increase your level of activity over 5 or 6 days and you don't provoke any symptoms, we then say you're safe to return to sport. Now, if this is your third or fourth or fifth concussion, you've had a couple this year already, then you would be much more cautious than that. These professional athletes have also, usually in the preseason, had some baseline cognitive testing. So we've got an impression about what their brain function is like prior to the injury. And so the last thing we do before getting them back into contact training is repeat those sorts of tests. So we've got some kind of pretty good objective data about whether this person's returned to normal or not. Now, with the Billy Slater case, I don't know anything about Billy Slater, but 2 weeks of amnesia does suggest a much more significant injury. And so if I was managing him, potentially I would be more conservative with that particular case. However, I think it's really important for the public to understand that we're making these decisions on an individual case-by-case basis. And sometimes what looks like quite a significant injury on a Saturday is actually something that settles down quite quickly and maybe the patient is able to safely get back the next weekend.
You're listening to Veach on Sport. Mark Watson with you. My guest is Dr. Mark Fulcher, one of New Zealand's leading experts when it comes to concussion. You mentioned, Mark, you mentioned the cognitive off-field test that rugby and rugby league players do if there is a suspected concussion. But it's also been rumoured that a number of players will deliberately fudge that score lowly on it so that if they do have to pass that test at some point later in the season, it's not that difficult to do. Is the system flawed?
Sure. So some of those tests, some of them are relatively, they're not very sophisticated, so there is some scope to fudge them. But the ones that most of the professional athletes are using are computer-based tests that have built-in fail-safe. So they know if you're kind of fudging the system. So they're reasonably reliable tests, and I don't think that players are able to fudge those ones particularly well.
You're listening to Veach on Sport. Dr. Mark Fulcher is my guest. We are very much putting the spotlight and focus on concussion. Mark, how many concussions is enough before you actually have to say, look, realistically, guys, you know, you do have to look after your long-term health here. And if you continue to go back into these gladiatorial games, you're just asking for trouble.
Yeah, look, that's a very difficult question as well. So I don't think there is an absolute number that will mandate retirement or mandate a sabbatical or a period away from sport. But if you have a player who's getting more concussions with less force that are taking longer to recover, those are all the sorts of things that might preempt a discussion around maybe time is to retire. So in my clinic, when I see someone like that, I talk to them about the potential long-term complications and what maybe they need to be thinking about longer term. We might do some more formal cognitive testing so we can see how their brain function compares with their peers. But ultimately, it comes down to the person's own level of comfort about continuing to play. But as I said, look, if I had a son who was playing rugby or football and they had 2 or 3 concussions in the season, I'd be thinking very strongly about encouraging them to take up something else.
It is a big issue at the moment. I would imagine that a lot of parents are looking at rugby league with the amount of media around concussion at the moment saying, hey, that's not for little Johnny, that's not for my son. What is the best thing rugby and rugby league can do to put parents at ease and to, say, demonstrate that they are taking this seriously and that the protocols in place are the right ones?
Yeah, look, I mean, all sports in New Zealand are working really hard at addressing the issue of concussion, and rugby and rugby league are certainly leading the way here. So if you look at rugby, there's the blue card initiative. So rugby are increasingly making concussion everybody's problem. So the referee has the ability, if they suspect concussion, to ask the player to go off, and they're mandating a medical assessment. They're starting at looking at doing some baseline testing in the community, at community rugby level. And there's a lot of education going in for coaches, players and parents across all sports again. So I think there's a lot of really good work going on here. And as I said, I would be very comfortable with my own kids playing rugby, rugby league, football under the current rules. And it's just, if they start to have issues with concussion, then I think at that point you start to make different decisions.
Do helmets and headgear make any difference at all?
Headgear makes no difference. So headgear reduces the likelihood that you might get a cauliflower ear or a scalp laceration, but it doesn't reduce the risk of concussion. Same with mouth guards. Mouth guards are really good at preventing dental and facial injury, but they don't prevent concussion.
There will be people listening to this today, perhaps, that have maybe picked up a little bit of a head knock over the weekend, and possibly in 2 days' time might still feel like they're recovering from that. What should they do? What's best practice for them?
Yeah, so just, I don't like the term head knock. I think that's something we should be trying to use less. So I think head knock kind of maybe is underplaying the problem a little bit. So concussion is a brain injury. So I think that it's important to understand what it is. But basically the symptoms can be quite varied. But generally most people may have some headaches. They may feel quite lethargic. They might just not feel quite themselves. Difficulty concentrating. They might feel more irritable. I think if you're experiencing any of those symptoms, or you just don't feel right, and you can remember some sort of impact to your head or some force being transmitted to their head, then it's best to go see someone and get that sussed out.
Should we replace the word concussion with the phrase mild traumatic brain injury?
I mean, that's a good point. I think concussion at the moment is the best overall term. I think it resonates with people. They understand what it is. But there is an argument to which if we called it brain injury, some people may take it more seriously. But I think at the moment it might just cloud the issue and confuse things somewhat. So I like talking about concussions. I think that's probably at the moment the best label that we have.
Okay, and just, a lot of junior rugby teams or teams below professional rugby don't have doctors in and around the environment, but if you do sense that your kid has been concussed or your child's been concussed, best practice in terms of a stand-down time, is it 2 weeks, 3 weeks? Is there a set rule here?
Well, there is a set rule. So the rugby and rugby league players require approximately a three-week stand-down. And so that's not based on any hard science. So it's a fairly conservative return to sport time. So the good thing about that is it's sort of saying, well, most patients or most players will have recovered at 3 weeks. What's often forgotten is that at 3 weeks, they need to have a medical assessment prior to returning to sport. The problem with a three-week stand-down is that at the end of the 3 weeks, some people will still have symptoms. And so it's important that if they're still symptomatic at 3 weeks, that they do wait till they're asymptomatic and that they are followed up by a doctor that's experienced managing concussion.
So why is it then not best practice at a professional level for an automatic three-week stand-down when you see a player clearly having lost their cognitive function or clearly having been knocked out even though at some point they've regained consciousness?
Yeah, look, that's a really good point. The best practice guidelines, so the international guidelines say rest until asymptomatic, and that may be 12 hours, it may be 24 hours, it may be 3 weeks, it may be longer, and then run through this graduated return to sport program. So so that's what professional rugby follows. So they follow these international best practice guidelines. And so there's an argument to which you could argue that maybe rugby should be looking to change their guidelines in community sport so that they better reflect professional sport, so that there is some consistency. But the 3 weeks really is a kind of more pragmatic, more conservative measure for the masses. So I guess it's they're trying to do their best to look after those community players who don't have access to the same level of medical support.
Now, Dr. Mark Fulcher, just before we do let you go, people listening to this again want to find out more information. What websites are out there?
So ACC have some excellent sports concussion guidelines. So the ACC Sport Smart website has some really useful and practical information. There is the document I've been alluding to is called the Fifth Consensus Statement in Concussion. And so it's a medical document, but it's a pretty easy read for people that are interested in concussion. It's not particularly medical. And then we, at our clinic, AXIS Sports Medicine Specialist, we have a concussion service and pilot that we're running with ACC at the moment. So each of those three websites have some useful information.
Well, Dr. Mark Fulcher, we do thank you for your insight this afternoon here on Veach on Sport.
Pleasure.